Members, please take your seats. Turn off or silence all cell phones and electronic devices. Children's, Families, and Seniors Subcommittee will now come to order. Jude Lean, please call roll and announce quorum.
Chair Coster.
Here.
Representatives Basabi.
Here.
Bearfield.
Here.
Black.
Here.
Barrero.
Here.
Gossett Seidman.
Here.
Harris.
Here.
Joseph.
Here.
Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Lopez.
Here.
Maney.
Yes, ma'am, here.
Michael.
Here.
Rayner.
Here.
Roach. Robinson.
Here.
Tremont.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
And Woodson.
Here.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Julene. Welcome, members. Today we are going to consider two bills. Our first bill is going to be HB 185, Dependent Children, by Representative Tribolsi. Representative Tribolsi, you're recognized to explain HB 185.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Vice Chair Maney and Ranking Member Robinson, thank you for allowing me to present House Bill 185 today. Currently, the Guardian Ad Litem Office represents 92% of children in dependency court and has been approved by the federal government to receive funding through Title IV-E of the Social Security Act to represent the remaining children. These changes clear the way for the Guardian Ad Litem Office to have every abused, abandoned, and neglected child represented for the first time in Florida's history. In Florida, the Guardian Ad Litem Office represents the child's legal interests with a multidisciplinary team, including a child welfare professional and a guardian ad litem. This bill removes the language indicating a guardian ad litem appointment is optional and codifies that all guardian ad litems are fiduciaries and requires the assignment of an attorney every time the Guardian Ad Litem Office is appointed. This bill removes provisions related to special needs when considering the appointment of an attorney ad litem and provides that an attorney ad litem may be appointed after determinations are made by the court and standardizes this throughout statute. The bill adds that the attorney ad litem may represent the child in proceeding outside of dependency cases to secure the services and benefits that provide for the care, safety, and protection of the child. And additionally, the bill requires the statewide guardian ad litem office to develop a training program, consultation, and technical assistance for attorney ad litems and chief judges. Approximately 900 youth transfer to adulthood from foster care each year. Once the youth exit foster care, they are often left without someone they can count on for ongoing support. This bill provides these youth with community lifelines that will help them with challenges of independent living, with provisions to the First Lady's Hope for Florida initiative. The statewide guardian ad litem office will work with the youth to identify a supportive adult that will enter into an agreement to maintain an ongoing relationship, and will also develop and maintain a mobile application that will identify resources for youth that are transitioning into adulthood. The bill also provides grants for financial literacy, as well as prep for the ACT and SAT. These same supports will be provided for 6 months for youth that have reunified if they are 14 years or older. At this time, the bill has an undetermined fiscal, and that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Tribolsi. Members, any questions? Questions, members? Okay. Well, you're recognized.
Thank
for
you.
A question.
Okay, so my question has to do with where it says somewhere in the bill, I'm trying to think of exactly where it is, where it talks about the discretionary
Is it the discretionary appointment of an attorney ad litem?
Yes. And so I'm all for having the guardian ad litem appointed. I like the mandatory. I'm still having trouble or concern with taking away the attorney ad litem. And I understand that there is an attorney on the team for the guardian ad litem. However, I just have some concern on who they're actually representing. It appears, so I'll let you stop there.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you for the question. And I think this is kind of a point of concern for people. There seems to be a little bit of misunderstanding here. So the guardian ad litem attorney represents the child, not the program. You have been misled to believe that they represent the program. And this bill codifies that. Also, be clear that the guardian ad litem attorney is an attorney, has passed the Florida Bar, and has had special training within the guardian ad litem program. And the attorney ad litem can be appointed upon discretion of the judge, or if anybody provides need, and they can, and the child can provide factual understanding, because this is an attorney-client privileged relationship, and we want to make sure that a child who is, you know, 0 to 10, which is what most of the court proceedings are helping, the children that are being helped do not have factual and rational understanding of court.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Follow-up. So when we talk about the attorney ad litem, I'm glad that you cleared that up as far as the attorney that's a part of the team. However, I guess my question would be, why are we changing? Because, like, right now, the court has discretion. The judge has discretion on whether to appoint an attorney ad litem. But it seems that we're restricting that in some way, or we're changing that. And I guess my thing would be, you know, judges are judges. We have faith in them to do what they're supposed to do. So why are we trying to put restrictions on that component?
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question. I don't think that we're putting restrictions on the judges. The judges right now are required to appoint an attorney ad litem under certain circumstances in a registry that we're eliminating. And this will actually open it up so a judge can appoint based on need and factual understanding in any circumstance.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep. Tribusi, I know a lot of us voted for the bill last time, but some more issues and concerns that we currently have led us to question some of the items proposed in the bill. One of them that I would like to have clarification on as to why the change is proposed is lines 594 to 609, where you are proposing a mandatory discharge of the attorney, and I'm asking why isn't the attorney kept for the duration of the case as opposed to discharge the attorney, because we know how those dependency cases, how they evolve. So could you clarify that for me?
You're recognized.
Yes, and thank you for the question. So just let me be clear that the guardian ad litem attorney is not discharged. They are on the case through the entirety of the dependency case. It is the attorney ad litem that would be discharged once the issue that they were dealing with has been cleared up, and that is common practice in law.
A follow-up and one more question, Madam Chair, if that's
possible. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in a case there's only one attorney, you're saying it's only the attorney ad litem that is discharged, right?
You're recognized.
How about in a case there's only one attorney? If that's the only one, because the case going to continue, the case is not finalized yet.
You're recognized for clarification.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Only the child will always have a guardian ad litem attorney. As soon as the guardian ad litem attorney is appointed, which every child receives a guardian ad litem attorney, the guardian ad litem attorney will stay with that child through the entirety of the dependency case. Only when an attorney ad litem is appointed, which means now there would be two attorneys, when the attorney ad litem addresses the issue at hand as to why they were appointed, then they will go and take care of other children that they are appointed to. But they will always have a guardian ad litem attorney that will not leave them through the entirety of the dependency case. And I hope I understood your question correctly.
Did she answer your question, Representative?
I have another question, to Madam Chair.
You're recognized.
I'm not the only one, and I don't want to monopolize the time.
You're
but
recognized.
I do have another question.
You're recognized for one more question.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And the issue of funding, how would, if this bill passes, how would that affect the different funding stream that is needed for those children, for the program?
You're recognized. For the guardian ad litem program, you're referring?
How would that affect the funding that comes, for example, in Broward County, I know, and Palm Beach also, I know they get 4E's reimbursement money. That is a federal funding that they get. So if the bill passes, how would that affect the funding streams?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, the Guardian Ad Litem program has now been approved to receive 4E funding as well. So they're both capable of receiving those funds.
You're recognized for a quick follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. So you're saying that would not affect any of the funding should the bill passes the way that it's written?
Representative Woodson, I'm a little confused about what funding you're talking about.
The 4E's reimbursement funding that they get, like, for example, Broward County gets that type of funding, Palm Beach County get it.
But who, well, this may be, okay, you're recognized.
You know about the funding, right?
Yes. So this would not affect their funding. They would still be able to draw down that funding when they needed it, if that's what you're asking. Broward, Palm Beach County, their legal aid, they would still be able to draw down those 4E dollars.
Okay. All right.
Does that answer your question?
Representative Williams, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. We spoke very briefly about the bill on last evening. Since it's an undetermined amount that this is going to be the bill once it passes, the guardian ad litem attorney and also the attorney ad litem, is it possible for each one of the children to have both?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for that question. It's two questions, so I'm going to separate it into two, if you don't mind. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I always appreciate your perspective. So the first question had to do with the funding. So the funding that will be provided, the Guardian Ad Litem Office already has full funding, and they will be able to serve more children. Instead of 92%, we'll be able to serve 100% of the children in dependency with the 4E money that they're drawing down. What's in the bill, as far as the fiscal and the bill, that has to do with the additional children who are aging out of foster care. So that's separate from any funding in the bill that would go towards the guardian ad litem office in the dependency side. Does that make sense?
But can they have both?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. They can have both a guardian ad litem attorney and an attorney ad litem. They will always have a guardian ad litem attorney. They can have an attorney ad litem if there is need expressed and if the child has factual understanding of the proceedings.
Follow up.
You're recognized.
Who determine if there's a need?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Anyone can bring up the question of need.
And the judge determines the need ultimately, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Representative Lopez, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. So my understanding is that a guardian ad litem must disclose all the information to the judges, while an attorney ad litem does not, because the conversations are confidential. Is that true?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you so much for that question. Yes, a guardian ad litem must work on behalf of the child's best interest, but they must also disclose what the child's wishes are. An attorney ad litem specifically has to represent the child with their expressed wishes.
follow-up.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So I believe that your bill says that only kids who have an understanding, right? Because, I mean, obviously, of the proceedings can engage in these confidential conversations. So am I correct that the bill ensures that the dependency judges get the most information they need in which to make an optimal decision for the child? Because I think that's obviously the intention, is the child.
You're recognized.
100%. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Joseph, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm trying to understand this because this is not my area of practice in the law. So a lot of the, going back to some of the questions that the ranking member had about removing the judge's discretion in appointing an attorney ad litem, I'm concerned about those instances where currently in statute, those are mandated. And I think the reason, it's my understanding that part of the reason they're mandated is because in a lot of these instances, these people may not have capacity or various issues that would eliminate their ability to have representation here. But one thing it seems like your bill doesn't fully assess, and if it does, please show me where, how to account for substituted judgment. Because there may be something that may be deemed in the best interest or in legal interest, but it's different from substituted judgment. Like we think of the Terry Schiavo case. So I'm just trying to understand how and if your bill takes that into account.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I am not an attorney. I don't know what substitutive judgment is, so maybe you can help me out with that. But I will tell you, going back historically with the registry that you're speaking of, where children are automatically appointed, you know, under these certain categories, we don't have a lot of history as to why these categories were created to begin with. And having conversations with, you know, judges, with attorney ad litems, with guardian ad litem attorneys, with guardian ad litems, just really digging in deep to that. Several years going back in dependency court, not all children were represented with an attorney in the guardian ad litem program. So what this law, what we're doing now is making sure that every child does receive an attorney, so that in some cases eliminates the registry because they didn't either have the proper funding or they didn't have the amount of attorneys that could represent all of these children and they put them in these categories. Well, now these attorneys and the guardian ad litem program, because one, we're representing 92% of the children in dependency court. Right now, we're under different leadership within the guardian ad litem office, and because all children can be represented, that's one of the reasons that we're removing that registry. And then if a judge, there is need and factual understanding, then an attorney ad litem can be appointed.
You recognize her follow-up?
Thank you. Following up on that same point, and then maybe I can have a conversation with the chair afterwards, because I think you practice some of this stuff? A little bit, not really. Okay, just kidding. So I need somebody to educate me more, because I still don't think that your bill accounts for that. And you acknowledge that you don't even know what it is. I didn't know what it was either until recently. But I don't know that the bill addresses that. And the reason I'm bringing this up is while your presentation of the bill characterizes it as giving more discretion to the judge, the fact is, and the staff analysis highlights, the fact that the competency standard that's required in your bill limits the court's ability to be able to appoint an attorney ad litem. And the point that I'm concerned about, they list two points there, is the second prong, where it requires a determination that the child has a rational and factual understanding of the proceedings. And when there's a mental incapacity situation, that's never going to be the case. So it's dramatically shrinking someone's access to that. And in those situations, it's different than just having an attorney. Every attorney's role on a case is not the same. And I'm concerned that part of what your bill, even though well-intentioned, might be disrupting some of that balance. We can have some more conversations offline about that. So I guess my follow-up question, not directly related to that, is going back to the question about funding. I'm not sure if you're aware, but if your bill were to pass, it actually would get rid of 4E funding for CSC providers, which is directly going to impact providers in at least Broward and Palm Beach County, maybe some in Hillsborough. And
is there a question?
Yeah, so my question is, are you aware that it will eliminate this funding for those specific providers?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. No, I'm not aware of that.
Okay, are you familiar?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are you familiar with 4E funding at all?
Yes.
Okay, what is your understanding of 4E funding and why wouldn't it be impacted on this?
I make sure the questions come through the chair so
yes.
that everybody gets a chance, but okay, you're recognized to answer that if you will.
I think I'm gonna have to get with you and
okay.
the committee after, unless Chair Koster would like to chime in on that. This is not in, from what I understand, the 4E are federal drawdown dollars, correct?
They are. Mm-hmm.
So that is my understanding of the 4E dollars. We do, Guardian Ad Litem Office does qualify for these 4E dollars at this time. Your second part of the question, how it affects the Children's Services Council, the funding, is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Funding that the legal aid would receive from Children's Services, that part of it I am not aware of.
Okay, we can have some follow-up conversations
sure.
offline. So,
sure, that's
yeah.
fine. Yeah, I mean, I think your question might have been a little bit broader than the bill, too, so I'm happy that
so
if we all
let me try to make
down.
It more narrow, but
well,
if you have time with questions,
yes,
I'll wait.
Why don't we do it offline? Representative, Ranking Member Robinson, you're recognized for a question. Oh, you do not, okay. Anybody else? Okay. There is an amendment. Representative Tribolsi recognized to present amendment barcode 687997.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I didn't realize that. We're gonna back up. That's okay. You're recognized for another question on the bill. That's okay.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Madam Chair. So I wanted to circle back on your response to something that the ranking member had asked earlier. And you had said that the guardian ad litem represents the child and not just the guardian ad litem group, meaning, and so I guess I want to make sure I understand what you're saying there and that we're not mixing up things. It's my understanding that the guardian ad litem represents the group and the best interests of the child based on their understanding, or maybe it's not that. Help me understand the difference between what your bill will be doing between the guardian ad litem and the attorney ad litem.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. The guardian ad litem attorney represents the child, not the program. It is independent representation of the child. And this bill codifies that.
Okay.
You're recognized.
And is that your, what are you basing that understanding on? Because the reason I'm asking is I've gotten information from attorneys in this practice area who tell me it's not what you're saying. So I just wanna see what you're basing that on. Mm-hmm.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I can tell you that in order to qualify for the 4E funding, if the guardian ad litem's attorneys would have been representing the program, they would not have been entitled to the funding.
Okay. I'll follow up offline. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ranking Member Robinson, did you have a question?
Brings up, because that's what I'm still unclear about.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out, we want every child to have an attorney. I'm with you, that's where we are. So why can't every child have an attorney ad litem? And why did the attorney have to come under the group? Because I guess I feel like it's kind of a, I don't want to say a conflict of interest, but you're tying them all together when it appears that at this point they were kind of separate entities. So why can't you explain that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Every child will have an attorney. The guardian ad litem attorney is an attorney. And sometimes, I will just be honest with you, if a child needs an attorney ad litem and there's need and factual understanding, again, then a judge, you know, has the discretion to appoint them. But there are so many attorneys in this case already. You know, there's an attorney for the mom, an attorney for the dad, an attorney for the child. There's so many attorneys in this case. Do we need one more attorney? And also the attorney ad litem attorney, although attorney ad litems are wonderful and there is a place for them, but these attorneys represent the child with confidential relationships. And this is just my own opinion, but I don't think children should have confidential relationships with adults.
And I'm going to add, prior to this bill, we have a policy in Florida. We've made the policy decision. Prior legislatures have made the policy decision that we have a best interest of the child welfare system, not an expressed wishes of the child welfare system. This bill further strengthens the best interest of the child system that we have created as a Florida legislature with an expressed wishes process in certain circumstances where a judge deems it appropriate. So I think that that is the backbone on which our child welfare system is based, and then this bill is just further strengthening that. If what I just said, we can talk about it further. I do a little bit enough of this work to be dangerous, so I'm happy to talk further offline. Do we have any additional questions? We have several appearance cards, so I want to make sure we have enough time to get through them all, and we have an amendment. So, okay. All right. You're recognized for one last very quick question.
All right. I'll make sure I make it quick. This question has to do with the judge having the discretion against to make it. Would you be willing to work with us on striking some of the languages that is in the bill as it relates to the judge having discretion? Because we know judges are put there for a reason, and they are in the best interest of the child as well. So would you be willing to work with us to get some of those language strike out of the bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. My door is always open, Representative Woodson, and to everyone here. The one thing that I want to ensure is that we are doing the best by children. I'm glad that we're having these conversations today. I did reach out to every single member before the committee to have these conversations ahead of time. I wish I would have had a heads up on some of them, so I probably could have answered them a little more clearly. But I think anything that we can do to make this bill in the best posture for children, I'm happy to do that.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Take two. Representative Tribolsi, you are recognized to present Amendment Barcode 687997.
Thank you, Chair. You sure? Members, this amendment conforms the current Florida statute about the Department of Children and Families Office of Continuing Care to ensure that the bill's intent is fulfilled. To this end, the amendment formally adds a reciprocal responsibility that requires the Office of Continuing Care to coordinate with the statewide guardian ad litem office to identify at least one mentor figure for the child when the child is unable to do so for themselves.
Thank you. Members, any questions on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, you're recognized to close on your amendment. Oh, no, never mind. Are we no public testimony on the amendment? So now you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Wait, close.
I apologize. There should have been debate on the amendment. So welcome back, members. It's not my first day, but it feels like it. Any debate on the amendment? Okay, now you're recognized to waive close again. I just wanted to do the whole amendment process twice with you today. Without objection, we'll show the amendment adopted. Members, we are now in public testimony on the bill as amended. Dennis Moore with the Guardian Ad Litem Office, you're recognized.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to address you and the committee this afternoon. I think some of the questions regarding the representation of children in Florida can be answered by just looking at existing law. And so children suffer from disability of non-age. That's under the Constitution of Florida, as well as been recognized by common law and even beyond our Constitution. And so traditionally, children can't enter into an attorney-client relationship. Children get a guardian, guardian ad litem, or next friend in order to participate in judicial proceedings. And so a long time ago, our Florida Supreme Court held that if children have legal interest in these proceedings, it is taken care of by an attorney appointed as guardian ad litem. And this is in a series of seminal cases, Garner versus Schilling, Kingsley versus Kingsley, and Meeker versus Kircher, all of these cases, which say because of disability of non-age, particularly in Garner, children are appointed or need an adult of reasonable judgment and integrity in order to participate in legal proceedings. So in Florida, since the start of all of this, they were not entitled to attorney ad litems in dependency proceedings until after 2003, 2004. So it's very accepted that guardian ad litems, especially guardian ad litem attorneys, are independent legal representation of children. And that's why the guardian ad litem office has received Title IV-E funding to represent the remaining children in Florida. Our position at the office is this. So back when all of this was first put into statute, we were representing very few children, not very few, but it was low. And so having more representation, even this form of representation, was acceptable. But what has happened with the statute is the disability of non-age has been lifted, and they have been put in attorney-client relationships in this situation. Our review, honestly, of it all is that it's duplicative representation for the most part for the reasons that are stated that they're being appointed. So the judges in dependency proceedings are actually, it is an equity proceeding, and the judges are in loco parentis, which means until such time as a parent can have their child safely reunified or some other means of permanency has been decided, then the judge makes the decisions of the parent. And that's why in these proceedings, it's accepted practice that the moniker for good judicial decision making is information, not more litigation. And so, so maybe that addresses some of the issues related to the overall reasoning here. But what we're trying to do is, as the guardian ad litem office is going to start representing all of the children now, with guardian ad litem attorneys, and again. The Legal Aid Office of Orange County, the Orange County Legal Aid Office represents all of the children in Orange County with guardian ad litem representation. So, I mean, that can be done in one of two ways when you're talking about collateral proceedings. That can be done by someone who's appointed to represent the child as a guardian ad litem attorney, or it can be engaging an attorney by the guardian ad litem, which is how the Orange County Bar does it, as they handle all of their collateral proceedings in-house. So that's how some of the workings kind of quickly, that's how some of the construct of dependency court works. As far as substituted judgment was originally a concept that was started in guardianship law because you had elder people who had a whole lifetime of experience. And so just using a best interest standard with them seemed wrong. And it really started in terms of advanced directives. And so what you're supposed to do is look at the history, if you can, of those individuals and what they may have decided. And the substituted judgment is to substitute their judgment for yours and not simply have your judgment, your best interest judgment, utilized for that individual. In dependency proceedings, you're dealing with children, especially children who lack capacity and in fact, many of whom are virtually non-compos mentis and cannot understand anything that is going on, such as babies. And so those individuals are represented normally by a guardian ad litem, or always in Florida represented by a guardian ad litem and with an attorney or as a guardian, or the attorney as a guardian ad litem. In the Rules of Civil Procedure, Rule 1.210B, which is the real party and interest rule, no child can participate in a civil proceeding unless they are doing it through a guardian, guardian ad litem, next of friend. And so that's why all of this case law, which I previously mentioned, it definitely establishes that a guardian ad litem is a fiduciary, owes undivided loyalty to that particular child, owes zealous advocacy and due care to that particular child. And that's why we've taken that common law and put it into the statute to make that absolutely clear. Whether it's in the statute or not, it is the law, and that's what we're doing here. And so what we're trying to do is square up the full representation of these children. So there you go, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. And members, I'm going to ask you to hold questions for our public testimony folks and get with them after just because of timing. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, ma'am.
Rachel Johnson with Legal Services of North Florida wishing to speak. You are recognized.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I want to share a little information about what attorney ad litem do and just encourage the committee members to please continue to seek information on this bill to really get an understanding of what happens day in, day out in dependency court. Currently, attorneys for children are appointed in five distinct areas, one being if a child resides in a nursing home or is being considered to reside there, if a child is prescribed psychotropic medications, if a child has a diagnosis of a developmental disability, if a child is being placed in a residential treatment facility, and also if a child is a victim of human trafficking. This bill will remove the judge from automatically appointing an attorney in those five categories. Attorneys are needed there because those are areas of special needs. And those are areas where we need to ensure that due process happens, as well as to ensure that the law is being strictly followed by the attorneys that represent children. Attorney ad litem are not just saying the express wish of a child when we go to court. We are also ensuring that the law is followed. We're assuring to provide counsel to children. And we are providing legal representation inside and outside of dependency settings. At this time, guardian ad litem attorneys, many of them represent over 100 cases, and multiple children are on every one of those cases. Where the standard is only 40 to 50 cases if you're having a child client individually, and 60 is looking as being too high to provide proper management of those cases. A guardian ad litem attorney spends their week, and I was a former guardian ad litem attorney, so I'm speaking from personal knowledge, in dependency court, doing dependency staffings, and other events related to dependency. In fact, my week would consist of Mondays being in trial all day, Tuesdays having staffings, as well as having specially set status hearings and pretrials, Wednesdays having judicial reviews, Thursdays having specially set hearings, and on Fridays I was in mediation, and this was every single week. And now this particular agency thinks that they can do more when at this time we are all helping to make sure that the kids that are at the most need receive the most help and the most assistance. Because when we think about these five categories, these children are being removed even further, many of them, from the community, because of the need that they need for their special needs and developmental disabilities and being in a nursing home, as well as being in a residential treatment facility. I'm just asking the committee to continue to seek information on what we do day to day, continue to seek information on really what child representation is for a guardian ad litem versus an attorney ad litem. It is different. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for being here. Cheryl Sattler, Foster Fairness, you're recognized.
Thank you. I should count this day a success because I did not trip just now. Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for taking careful time to consider this bill. There is a legal history behind attorneys ad litem. I know many of you are familiar with the Florida Bar. The Florida Bar has a number of committees, one of which is the Legal Needs of Children. It is staffed, and the members of that committee are among the best lawyers in the state, people with collectively hundreds of years of experience. They spent years studying this. And 15 years ago, more or less, this legislature agreed with them that these special needs kids were not getting the support they needed. They did that with the support of the Guardian Ad Litem program, which itself was part of recognizing that there was a problem. That problem hasn't changed. The Guardian Ad Litem's position has changed. So I'm here to tell you that, in my opinion, as someone who's worked with children for almost 30 years, this program that this bill would destroy is a program that works. It takes a critical resource away from incredibly under-resourced children. It's an insult to our judges who practice independency every day. It moves the state of Florida backwards. And I'd also just like to mention that it's entirely possible that some of the confusion is that if you look at things like the Guardian Ad Litem Program's official operating procedure, it states in black and white that the Guardian Ad Litem attorney does not represent the child. The OPAGA did a study on child representation a couple of years ago. It found the same thing. So I hear people saying that the Guardian Ad Litem attorney represents the child, but I don't see any evidence of that. And for those of you who are attorneys or familiar with attorneys, attorneys work under a code of ethics, professional regulations. It is inherent in the definition of legal representation to have a confidential relationship with a client, to engage them, to work with them. And I appreciate all the questions. I think this is a committee full of people who want to do the right thing for kids. And I'm just worried that this is a bill that will take us a giant step backwards for kids who really don't have a voice. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for being here. Next up is John Walsh, Florida Children's Rights Coalition and Legal Aid Society of Palm Beach County. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair Koster and members of the subcommittee. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today about this important legislation. And Representative Trabalsi, I hope to be able to meet with you privately sometime to talk about it, because from your reputation, I know your heart is always in the right place on these issues. I know I don't have a lot of time. My name is John Walsh. I'm an attorney with the Legal Aid Society in Palm Beach County. I've been representing children for over 25 years. And I'm also president of the Florida Children's Rights Coalition. I don't have a lot of time here today to go into a great deal of depth on our concerns. I do want to start by prefacing my comments by saying the guardian ad litem attorney is a party to the case. One party cannot represent another party ethically as their attorney. And that's just basic law. So we have a problem right there. Our first concern with this bill, however, is the competency standard provision. While the bill will still allow a judge to appoint an attorney ad litem for children in dependency cases, the bill has a new competency standard that would prevent the judges from appointing attorneys like me for children who do not meet this standard. The provision of this bill requires that the child has a rational and factual understanding of the proceedings and sufficient present ability to consult with an attorney with a reasonable degree of rational understanding. I don't know what that means exactly. I know most of my clients could not meet that test. And it is generally agreed that no one under the age of 6 could meet that. That's 53% of the population of foster care. That's over 10,000 children. No judge could appoint an attorney for any of those children. However, it does not just affect young children. Imagine a set of 14-year-old twins. One is autistic, the other is not. The one child can have an attorney, the autistic child cannot under this bill. Do you see the disability rights issue there? Our judicial branch of government, through the Florida Supreme Court, has been governing the practice of law and telling us how we represent incapacitated clients. As a matter of fact, they just recently amended their rule on that. This legislation steps in and says attorneys cannot represent incapacitated clients. Do you see the separation of powers issue there? Our second concern with the bill is that it eliminates the five appointment categories. Our problem with that is that these five categories of children were added to the statute with the input and consensus of all stakeholders in child welfare, which is traditionally how changes to Chapter 39 are made, with input and consensus, because we're dealing with our children here, and believe me, it is life or death in some cases. It is certainly harm or no harm in some cases, in most cases. The reason most of the categories were created was to address a child welfare crisis, the over-medication of children, the institutionalization of children, the human trafficking of children. And that's because the stakeholders at the time realized, including previous guardian ad litem leadership, that the guardian ad litem attorneys could not do it all. Much like pediatricians, they needed specialists to whom they could refer these difficult cases because they're carrying over 120 cases each. So they needed specialists to refer these harder cases to. And that's what me and my office and my colleagues around the state do. We function that way with the Guardian Ad Litem program that we have worked hand in hand with collaboratively for years. And I'm just asking you not to pass legislation that would leave the Guardian Ad Litem attorneys on their own with their 120 plus cases as like pediatricians with no specialists to refer the difficult children to and the difficult cases to. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for being here. Eric Emery, Guardian Ad Litem Office, Regional Counsel, you're recognized.
Thank you. Some of you may have heard me speak before. My name is Eric Emery. I thought we had gotten past some of this, but apparently we have not. I'm a licensed member of the Florida Bar, and I'm an attorney with the Guardian Ad Litem Office. I've spent my entire adult career advocating for children in the state of Florida. I was a child protective investigator before I went to law school. Then I worked for the state of Florida through Children's Legal Services, advocating for children's best interest. I've spent the last half decade working for the Guardian Ad Litem Office, and I represent children. I do not represent the state. I do not represent a mother. I do not represent a father. I represent the child when I go into court. I have an undivided loyalty and a trust with that child. I speak for the children. I hear what their expressed wishes are, and I advocate what that child wants to the court. I also gather all information from teachers, doctors, therapists, professionals. I look at all the evidence that is presented to the court, and I advocate and I provide that information to our judiciary, which I think is more than competent, to make those legal determinations, those factual findings, and to ultimately make rulings in the best interest of the children. There's been some previous discussions about the fact that this is taking something away. It is not taking anything away. Those five categories that currently exist are judges who are very intelligent, very smart, and I have the pleasure and joy of practicing in front of on a regular basis, have the discretion to appoint an attorney ad litem in those instances when a child has the capacity to do so. What this bill does is take away the duplicative nature of what we currently have going on within our judicial system, within our dependency courts. I am here, I exist, and I advocate every child that I represent. I have the pleasure of working with at least 200 other attorneys in the state of Florida that do the exact same thing every single day. We show up for shelter hearings, we are appointed at the very beginning of the case, and we stay on the case throughout the entire proceedings. We do not go anywhere. And long afterwards, most of us maintain contact with the children if they want to. We build relationships with them and we advocate for them. So to say that the guardian ad litem does not represent children is offensive to me personally, because that is what I have done, and that is why I've chosen my profession. So I wanted to make that clear. There are also instances in which things have been done in the past that this bill attempts to codify and rectify to bring us up to where we are in 2023. I don't mind sharing that my mother was previously a guardian ad litem volunteer. I didn't even know that the child welfare system existed when I was a younger man. But when my mother was a guardian ad litem volunteer, they did not have attorneys. This was some time ago. It was just lay volunteers, members of your community, that were going into the court out of the goodness of their heart. They were gathering information, and they were providing that information to the judges so that they can make decisions. My mother didn't have a GAL attorney to talk to provide that information to, didn't have an attorney that could file motions on that child's behalf, didn't have an attorney that could file petitions when needed, didn't have anyone that could go in and have that legal mind. My mother is not an attorney. She's a wonderful woman. She is not an attorney. Now that has changed. We have Guardian Ad Litem volunteers. We have child advocate managers. And most importantly, we have Guardian Ad Litem attorneys that represent children. And we are able to go into court and advocate for those children. And I just want that to be abundantly clear that this bill takes away the duplicative nature. We have some amazing attorneys that are attorney ad litems. Some of them you've heard from today that I have the utmost respect for. I've worked alongside of them and with them and, you know, specifically on cases with them. But when, for example, you have a four-year-old child that is prescribed psychotropic medications, we are doing the same thing in those instances. We're going out, we're gathering information from the doctor about what they're being prescribed and why they're being prescribed it. And then we're talking with the child and we're hearing what they want. And then you'll go in and it's my job as a guardian ad litem attorney to acknowledge to the court what the child's expressed wishes are and then what their best interest is. And that's the standard for our court, to make that best interest finding for the children. And so what an attorney ad litem is doing in that situation is talking with a four-year-old who doesn't really have the rational understanding to understand what their diagnosis is, what the medications are, what those side effects could be. And so you have that attorney ad litem that's basically doing the same thing that I'm already doing. They're going to go in and tell the court what the child wants, except they don't tell the court what's in the best interest of the child. They're just basically saying again what the child's expressed wishes are, which is what I also do. And so they do good work, and this bill allows our very competent judges to look at all of the categories and when appropriate, and when a child has the ability to understand and make reason and speak with those attorneys, the judge can appoint them not only in those five categories, but opens it up. It broadens what we currently have, because right now, in reality, they look at those five circumstances, and then there's a catch-all. But if it's not really one of those five categories, they never really look at the attorney ad litems. What this bill does is take away the duplicative nature of the AAL and the GAL and will allow our judges to appoint attorney ad litems for children that are 15, 16, 17 for a wide variety of reasons if they feel that it's appropriate. So thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I was wondering if you could state on the record, do you support or oppose the bill?
I support the bill.
Thank you.
I apologize.
Thank you. Cynthia Fairman, Guardian Ad Litem Program, you are recognized. And she is a proponent of the bill.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Cynthia Fairman, and I'm a third-generation foster child from Tampa. Because of my experience, I'm proud to be a champion for other children in care and ensure that they have a better outcome and be the voice they did not know they needed. I'm here to support House Bill 185. This bill defines the role and importance of the statewide guardian ad litem office. For foster children, a judge stands in the parent's shoes and relies on the guardian ad litem office to provide the court with all of the facts regarding the child, including the child's wishes. This allows the judge to make a decision on the child's safety and welfare, knowing the entire story. The guardian ad litem multidisciplinary team assigned to a child always includes an attorney, a child welfare professional, and hopefully a trained volunteer. The team assigned uses the same standard a parent would. They intervene and they help. There seems to be a little bit of confusion on child representation in Florida. Let me clarify. Every child appointed to the guardian ad litem office is assigned an attorney. What many people don't realize is this is an attorney ad litem who is independent of the guardian ad litem office. They must advocate to the court what the child wants, regardless of safety and welfare. An attorney ad litem is allowed to keep secrets from the judge and maintain confidentiality with the child, regardless of age. The changes this bill would bring will help children in crisis, such as human trafficking victims. They should not have to direct their legal affairs at a time when they have been brainwashed and suffering from severe trauma. No child in any situation should have to direct an attorney about their safety and welfare. Children in foster care need to be left to be kids. Did you know Florida currently infants and toddlers are in an attorney-client confidential relationship with Attorneys Ad Litem's Independency Court, infants and toddlers in Florida are somehow directing their attorney. That sounds weird, right? I mean, if a child can't communicate, how can this even be happening? What you need to know is guardian ad litem attorneys can represent a child's best interests. An attorney ad litem can only represent what a child wants and desires. I can tell you, when I was in foster care, I was not in a place to direct an attorney. I would have made several mistakes in my life, would not be what it is right now. However, it's turned out pretty good. I own several businesses and I have 4 college degrees. We need to make sure that every child has something looking out for their best interests. I want to ask you, if an attorney ad litem legally can keep secrets from a judge, the judge who is standing in the parent's shoes making decisions for a child's safety and welfare, how does this practice keep a child safe? I believe in this office so much that I became a guardian ad litem volunteer 6 years ago, and now I'm a child advocate manager. We build a trusting relationship with every child on our caseload. I work hand in hand with the guardian ad litem attorney. I call them daily just to make sure they know what's going on at all times. We work as a team and we do whatever it takes to make sure the kids are safe. And they get every single resource to thrive, to become a functioning member of society. When I was in care, I was adopted, and on my paperwork, it stated I had brown eyes. If you come close enough to me, you're gonna see my eyes are beautiful and green. They're not brown. My guardian ad litem attorney knew what color eyes I had. My attorney ad litem didn't. Every foster child in foster care needs to have someone who knows them enough and knows what color eyes they have. I have had cases that the attorney ad litem asked me before we walk into the courtroom, is the child here? Meanwhile, I already waved to my child, gave them a hug, and said hello. The guardian ad litem office is not only the legal representation of the child in the dependency court, they also attend school events, make sure the child gets to their therapy appointments, and make sure the children visit with siblings. The office as a team makes sure things are getting done and are done well. If anybody wants to shadow me for a day, come to court with me, do home visits, or come to school, please take me up on that. Let me show you what we do and have you advocate alongside with us. Thank you.
Thank you for being here and sharing your story. Karen Mazzola, Florida PTA, waves in support. Members, that concludes public testimony. Is there any debate on the bill? And I will just remind members, we do have another bill also on the agenda. Ranking Member Robinson, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Rep. Trabulski. I know without a doubt that this is coming from a great place because I know that you love children. However, I am at this time still, we're going to have more conversation. We're going to definitely have more conversations. And I'll tell you just a little bit about where I am on the struggle. Everything that they said about the guardian ad litem, I know is factual. I'm just concerned about that attorney piece. I mean, the volunteer, the advocating for the kids, the building the relationship. I'm an educator, so I know that they come to school events, they make sure you have prom dresses, all of that. I still am not confident that the guardian ad litem attorney is not a part of the team. You know, and I just believe that, I think that we should have them. I think that whole team is needed. But I don't see where we should take away that other term. Because I personally believe that the judge should have all of that information. They should have all the information from the guardian ad litem team. And then if there is some additional information that the attorney ad litem could share, then I feel that that should be needed too. Because all information would be beneficial to make the best decision for the child, not just one side of the team. So at this time, I'm going to still be no.
Representative Williams, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Rep. Trabulski, I want to say thank you for taking the time to speak to me last evening about the bill itself. I think I'm just one of the ones that serve on this committee that has had the opportunity to sit in the courtroom with foster kids,
have had the opportunity to wear the hat of the guardian ad litem, have had the opportunity of being a foster parent and making sure that the children's voices was heard from time to time. I really think at this time that it comes down to money. And if it comes down to money and us making the decision, I don't think a dollar amount should be put on a child's life or safety. I'm going to be up on the bill today. I have made some recommended amendments that I would like to see in the bill before it actually hit the floor. And because you have taken the time and been willing to sit with me and be open-minded about making some changes to make it better for the kids that we serve, I will be up on the bill, and hopefully by the time it gets to the floor that I can continue to be up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep. Chambusi, thank you so much for talking to me and meeting about the different issues that we have raised on the bills. I am very familiar with guardian ad litem. I have worked in the juvenile court in my career and the adult court as well. So I'm familiar with the proceedings and everything else. One thing that I'm very concerned about is the judge discretion, which I have discussed with you, because I believe that the judges are there for a reason and they should have full discretion to make a decision. And I know you have a good heart. I know you care about the children, because we have had several conversations and we have worked on previous bills. So I'm willing to work with you, because you've seen my county have a lot, they have a lot of issues with the bill. They have called me, they have sent me email, and of course I represent Broward County and also the state of Florida, because we are here to make decisions in the best interest of the children of the state. So I have some additional issues as well that I would like to work with you on. So today I will not be able to be up on the bill, but I'm willing to work with you in order for us to get it to where we need to be, because I know you have good intent. I have no doubt that you have very good intent, and I'm willing to work with you on it. So today I'm not going to be up. I'm going to be done, but I'm hoping that we will continue to work together to make it where we all, where it needs to be. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Representative Harris, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't want to repeat anything that my wonderful colleagues have said. I just do, at this point, it is difficult for me to vote up. I have a concern that the guardian ad litems and the attorney ad litems, they are two distinct types of representation, and as it stands, they give a more robust representation to the child, and I'm concerned about removing half of that and having it be at a discretionary process, and I am concerned about the impact it would have on children with disabilities. So I, for right now, I am also a no, but I do trust in you to work very well with the representatives who are much more educated and have much more experience than I do in guardian ad litems, to get to a bill that retains that robust representation from both sides, and a bill that we can feel comfortable supporting. And I thank you for bringing it forward. You always do work very hard to do what's best for children, and that's appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Michael, you're recognized in debate.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Chabrosi, for bringing this. I had a question with one of the presenters, Eric.
We're in debate on the bill, but if you want to get with him afterwards, I'm sure he would be happy to answer your questions.
But I wanted to say with this bill, I really appreciate you bringing this forward, and I did get your message about it, and I'm sorry I didn't respond. And one of the things that I really appreciate about this is, having served as a guardian ad litem volunteer, I know the hard work that the volunteers put forward. They work not just with that child, but with the teacher. They work with any therapist. They work with the attorneys that are already involved in the child's case. Everybody, the parents, if the child has been removed, And having served in that capacity, I know that they are unbiased, and children have to have someone who has their voice, who has what they want, that's unbiased, that is not, that doesn't have a reason to sway the judge one way or the other as far as keeping that child in foster or care or reuniting them with the family. So I thank you for your work on this. I get this. I understand what this bill is, and thank you. And thank you for working diligently on this, because reading this, you really went through, you went deep into this. So thank you.
Thank you.
You're recognized. Representative Joseph, sorry. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Trubulski. And I wanted to just acknowledge and thank everybody who came to testify, whether it's guardian ad litem, attorney ad litem, people working with legal services. We appreciate your input here. And I wanted to affirm, I don't think anybody on this committee does not value the guardian ad litem program. So to the extent anybody was questioning that or whatever, I just wanted to reaffirm, and I don't think anybody on the committee would disagree with me, that it plays a vital role. The question is, with this bill, with the changes, what role will the attorney ad litems be able to play in the whole system? I don't think anybody likes duplicating efforts and making the system less efficient. I think we're concerned about due process, both procedural and substantive, to make sure that people have access to the things that they want. I'm remembering an OPAGA study about government. So the OPAGA study specifically looked at attorney ad litems and this attorney-client situation, as well as the American Bar Association's Model Act that talks about representation in children. I think we have to distinguish between, you know, our common world understanding and notions about what it means to be in relationship with an attorney versus what that means in the legal context. And it's very important not to conflate the two, because they're not the same. A lot of the things that I learned about with the issues with this bill were actually just within the hour or less than an hour before committee, so I didn't have the opportunity to get into that with you. But we can have some further conversations, most of which I think my colleagues, both to my left and my right, are in touch with the people that, you know, raise some of the concerns. So I don't need to insert myself in that to be superfluous. But I'm happy to be here right now. Because of those reservations, I will have to be a no, because I'm a when in doubt, vote no. But we can always get there before the floor. So I'm hopeful that we will get there before the floor. And again, I just wanted to thank everybody for their participation here today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, members, as always, for the robust debate. Representative Trubulski, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. I know this was a long bill to get through today, and I appreciate your time and attention. It is an extremely important matter. There's nothing better that we can do than protect our most vulnerable citizens, especially those who have been abused, abandoned, or neglected. So thank you for paying attention. Thank you for the people that came and gave testimony. I think it sheds a really good light on what we are doing here today, and perhaps even pose some questions. The good thing about being the first stop for this bill is that we have a couple more stops to go, and a good bill always has a lot of good, robust conversation, a lot of questions, a lot of feedback, and good suggestions. So my door is always open. I want to do, as do all of you, I know, I can tell by your hearts and your comments, want to do what's best by children always. So I look forward to continuing to work through this and hear your considerations and suggestions and have further conversation. And with that, I close.
Representative Trubulski, having closed on her bill, Julie, please call roll on HB 185 and announce a vote.
Representatives Basabi?
Yes.
Barefield?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Gossett-Seidman?
Yes.
Harris?
No.
Joseph?
No.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Lopez?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes, today.
Michael?
Yes.
Rayner? Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
No.
Tremont?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes, today.
Woodson?
No, today.
Chair Koster?
Yes.
13 yeas, 4 nays, Madam Chair.
Members, by your vote, will show HB 185 reported favorably as amended. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, members, next we're going to take up HB 73, Supported Decision-Making Authority, by Representative Tant. Representative Tant, you're recognized to explain HB 73.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair Maney and Ranking Member Robinson, for taking up this bill. And thank you, Madam Chair, for encouraging me to try one more time on this bill and signing on as a prime co. I appreciate that. Members, under current law, people with developmental disabilities typically have a guardianship or guardian advocacy in order to execute life decisions. These options both result in the loss of rights to individuals with developmental disabilities, including those who have the capacity to make decisions with support from a helper. What this bill does is 4 things. It creates a new section in Florida's Power of Attorney chapter, creating a new option, establishing a supported decision-making agreement by individuals with developmental disabilities who have the capacity to do so with an agent. The term supported decision-making agreement is defined beginning on line 126 of the bill, allowing for the assistance for these folks with accessing, collecting, and obtaining information pertinent to making life decisions, assisting decision-makers in understanding the consequences, options, and requirements for making those life decisions, and then assisting in communicating with others about those life decisions. Secondly, the bill goes to where the courts. When the courts are to considering guardian advocacy, the bill requires that the consideration of specific abilities and needs of the persons with developmental disabilities occur and to determine whether or not supported decision-making agreements are appropriate. If they are not, in fact, appropriate, a statement to that effect must be submitted. The third thing is that when a court is petitioned to determine restoration of capacity of an individual, the bill provides for the following. It requires a statement as to whether the individual uses assistance to exercise his or her rights, and if so, why that assistance is insufficient or inappropriate. It allows the incapacity examining committee to allow for assistance in communicating with the individual being examined when requested by court-appointed counsel. It expands the rights of those seeking restorations of capacity to include whether or not the capacity of the individual to independently exercise his or her rights to make those decisions with appropriate assistance is appropriate. And finally, the bill adds supporting decision-making agreements to the list of resources provided to students with disabilities aged 18 to 22 in our schools. There is no fiscal impact to the bill. I do believe it will result in cost savings to family because guardianships are expensive to pursue, and I do think it's going to help restore dignity and respect to those with developmental disabilities who can, in fact, make decisions with some supports. This bill is the 3-year work product of Disability Rights Florida. Actually, the 4-year, we're in our 4th year, aren't we? Our 4-year work product of Disability Rights Florida, the Elder Law Section of the Florida Bar, and the Real Property and Probate Section of the Florida Bar. Members, that is the bill, and I humbly ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative. Members, any questions on the bill? Okay, no questions. We do have some public testimony. Richard Tongona, Florida State University. A proponent of the bill. Richard, you here? No? Okay. Proponent of the bill. Shantae Jones, AARP, waving in support. Margaret Hooper, Florida Developmental Disabilities Council, waiving in support. Larissa Stetchen, Mayor of Sunny Isle Beach, waiving in support. Laura Lee Minutello, Disability Rights Florida, waiving in support. Dina Justice, ARC of Florida, waiving in support. Victoria Zepp, waiving in support. Jane Johnson, Florida Association of Centers for Independent Living, waiving in support. Brian Jogers, the Florida Bar Elder Law Section, waiving in support. Damaris Allen, Florida PTA, waiving in support. That concludes public testimony. Members, any debate on the bill? Ranking Member Robinson, you're recognized in debate.
I just want to thank Representative Tant and Representative Koster for continuing. You said it took some time. You know, you're going on, what, 4 years? And it's just a testament to you not giving up on our residents that have disabilities and their families. A lot of times, you know, people are forgotten and they're put off to the side. But you continuously need to bring this bill forward to make things better and a little easier for those families is commendable. So just thank you.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Rep. Tent, for this great bill. I have gotten to know you since I've been in the legislature, and one thing that I know, you are a very strong advocate for people with disabilities, and this is a population that I strongly support as well. I really appreciate the work that you have done. This bill would really do a lot of good because people look at the ones who suffer from any type of disability, they look at them like they cannot make decisions for themselves. While they can, sometimes they might need some support. Just like when my mother had a stroke, I was a surrogate for my mother. I was able to help her to make decisions, and you are working to make sure that they get the support that they need in order for them to make decisions, be part of the process as well. So I really appreciate you as a colleague, as an advocate, as a friend, and I will support you 100% on this bill. So thank you for your hard work on behalf of the people with disabilities and the state of Florida. Thank you.
Seeing no additional debate, I don't normally debate on a bill, but since I'm the prime co-sponsor, I feel like maybe I can take a moment of personal privilege. Thank you so much for not giving up on this bill. I want to recognize I have a constituent, Kayla, who I hope is watching somewhere while she's away at UCF. She just started her first year in college, and she's the one that brought this issue to my attention, and her fierce advocacy for herself and for her peers was so moving to me, and it's why I reached out to you and why I was so thankful that you were willing to not give up the good fight. So Kayla, if you're out there, thank you for continuing your advocacy, and it works. And, you know, just thank you. Thank you for not giving up. I look forward to seeing this through to the end this year.
Me too.
I know this process is a lot about timing, and so maybe this is the year. I think it is. So with that, you are recognized to close on your bill.
I would like to especially thank Disability Rights Florida for continuing to work and to resolve the issues that came up with the two sections of the bar, and for working with this parent who was concerned about her own child involved in this process. And so I have learned so much. I continue to learn so much through this process and continue to learn so much from Disability Rights Florida as well as the two sections of the bar. I want to just also say that while we're all here, we should all say congratulations to Olivia for her recent marriage. So congrats, Olivia. And then finally, I just ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Tant, having closed on her bill, Julene's going to call roll, but I'm just going to remind the committee members, yes and no are the only appropriate answers when we're taking roll call, because we don't want Julene to have any issues with recording votes. So if you have something other than yes or no, debate is the time. So having said that, Julene, please call roll on HB 73 and announce a vote.
Representatives Basabi?
Yes.
Bearfield?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Gossett Seidman?
Yes.
Harris? Joseph?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Lopez? Maney?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Rayner? Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Tremont?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Koster?
Yes.
15 yeas and 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members. By your vote, we'll show HB 73 reported favorably. Thank you. All right, members, that concludes our agenda for today. As always, I appreciate all of the great input and debate and questions and participation in the meetings. And with that, Representative Killebrew moves we rise. Without objection, meeting's adjourned.